Do you or your clients have a commercial collection matter that's going nowhere? The Sarachuk Law Firm specializes in the most challenging collection matters, whether it is a single matter or a portfolio of cases. They are based in New York with relationships around the world. Sarachuk's proprietary databases and tried and proven methods have earned them an unmatched reputation for success in getting their clients what they're owed. They work on a contingency fee basis, so they're only compensated when they succeed. The Sarachuk Law Team strongly supports Israel. You can reach the Sarachuk Team at www.sarachuklawfirm.com. That's S-A-R-A-C-H-E-K lawfirm.com or at 646-403-9775. The proceeding is an attorney advertisement and past results are no guarantee of future performance.
Hi, I'm Amanda Borshaldan. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing,
your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Sunday, January 10th. I'm joined by David Horovitz, our founding editor, and Chaviv Gur, our senior analyst. How are you guys doing?
Good, Amanda. Hi.
Beautifully. Just beautifully.
I have to say, I'm doing great. I just came back from summer. Essentially, I was near Jericho on the banks of the Jordan River, and I witnessed really a peaceful island of coexistence at the first church service in a church that was abandoned 54 years ago during, obviously, the Six-Day War. And it was really covered with mines all over the field. And just in October, the mines were finally taken out. And so the Franciscan Order held the first church service there for today, which commemorates the day that Jesus is meant to have been baptized. So going from this island of peace back into politics, David, last night, Gideon Saar said something that created a bit of a parallel with the American mayhem that happened last week. Can you fill us in?
Well, first of all, hi, and I'm glad you're in such a good mood, and I'm still laboring under the weight of what happened in America the other day. So it's good that we talk about that first. Gideon Saar at the moment is the main rival to Netanyahu. We have elections in a little over 2 months. And he was on television being interviewed last night. He was asked about the assault on the Capitol. He was invited by the interviewer to make the parallel, to say, isn't Netanyahu really doing what Trump is doing? Isn't Netanyahu whipping up his supporters? And are we not heading into the same situation? And, he was quite savvy. First of all, he stressed, and this is really, I mean, we could talk about this for a long time, but this is one of the complexities of the American-Israel relationship, given what's happening now. He distinguished between wide support in Israel for some of Trump's policies and his aberration at what unfolded a few days ago. He said, as a Democrat, you know, this is unacceptable. As somebody who believes in democracy, this is unacceptable. And then on Netanyahu, he refused to draw parallels, but he said, you know, under Netanyahu, there's been a focused attack, he said, on all the institutions of the state. From the Israeli presidency to the police to the Central Elections Committee. And if there are lessons to be learned, and there are, he said, you know, when you talk before elections that they're going to be stolen, and you then say you don't accept the result, well, you know, people draw conclusions. And what we saw playing out in America is one of the consequences. And he said, we won't let this happen here. I'm not sure there's anything particularly profound in any of that, but I think it's central to understanding, you know, we are very, very closely tied, our two countries. This leadership of Israel has had a very close relationship with that leadership in the United States. And that administration of the states has done things that are widely appreciated in Israel, even as Israelis on a personal level have always been passionately divided about Trump. Even as Israel in America is increasingly perceived in the last few years as a partisan issue. And therefore, without me saying anything profound, it just underlines how acutely sensitive and complicated what is happening in America is, just from this narrow perspective, the one we focus on, of Israel and its interests and its future and its well-being and its alliances.
I couldn't agree more that Trump for Israelis is a very complicated individual. I know when I'm speaking with my teenagers and trying to work through what's going on, they talk about how he brought the embassy to Jerusalem, and they're just puzzled themselves, why hadn't this happened so many decades ago when it could have, and other things of that nature. And it just makes them all the more puzzling, I think, for Israelis who didn't grow up in the States and who are trying to sort out their identity vis-a-vis things that are going on every day, contemporary-wise, like in the past several years. Khabib, do you have any thoughts on the complicated nature of Trump's legacy in Israel?
Yeah, you know, it occurs to me that I think he's a very extreme sort of person for Israelis, because he broke, you know, these kind of diplomatic assumptions about, for example, Jerusalem. The moving of the embassy to Jerusalem isn't exciting to Israelis because I was born in Jerusalem. My kids were born in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is not more my capital after Trump moved the embassy than it was before. But what Trump did, and I do appreciate, and I think is enormous and significant, is that Israelis are very pragmatic people facing real dangers. And we feel like the diplomatic sort of language and the way that the world thinks in these sort of diplomatic speak, and it's a kind of mix and match of assumptions that becomes the international diplomatic, you know, common sense that nobody's allowed to question, and those goalposts move, and they often move in ways that are not very useful or helpful. I think there's this general sense that the way the international community speaks, international diplomacy functions, wasn't healthy for Israel, for the West. It doesn't know how to deal with China's crimes or Hamas's crimes, but it does know how to come down hard on Israel and on small countries. And Trump broke a lot of that. And that's a kind of relief that there's some kind of, to the Israeli mind, common sense introduced into the world. And then we look at Trump in America, and there's so much that's so horrifying. I mean, Nazis walked into Congress. It doesn't matter how much you love Trump. Nazis. And he called them there. And he told them to march. And he didn't condemn them until Thursday night. Took him 36 hours. Nazis, you know what I mean? Or when you tell Israelis there's no universal health care, that's unimaginable, and that's the Republican position, to not make health care available for reasons of free market, etc. So Trump is both sides.
Correct. So we have Gideon Saar, who's warning us against the rhetoric that could bring us to another situation such as we saw in the Capitol Hill, but here in Israel. And then we have Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who released footage just on Friday about a siege that apparently, or he alleges, or his staff alleges, happened at his house, his residence on Balfour, on January 2nd.
Well, I think what the channels all ran all at once, an exclusive, and I think it's been generally accepted that the exclusive came from the Prime Minister's office.
Yeah, no question about that. I think, you know, if Netanyahu was behind the coincidental triple scoop of all three channels, I just don't think he was overtly arranging it. And the sense is that there was some kind of effort to capitalize some really foul effort in that case to capitalize on what was happening in America and assert that the prime minister, rather than Trump, is the capital. In other words, that it's not Netanyahu who's stirring up the crowds, it's Netanyahu who is about to be invaded by the mob. We've already had the coalition chief, you know, before immediately the nightmare was unfolding on Capitol Hill, drawing that parallel between the anti-Netanyahu protesters and the would-be destroyers of American democracy. I don't think that this is going to stick to Netanyahu's advantage. I think Netanyahu has a whole array of other tools that are working really well for him at the moment. He doesn't really have much of an opposition. Gideon Saar is his best opposition. And his effective use of the or handling of the vaccine and pandemic issues, I think, are going to serve him incredibly well. I don't think he's going to win new supporters by attempting to draw any kind of parallels to his advantage. I suspect it can only work to his disadvantage what's playing out in the United States. But I think he's got lots of other ideas and possibilities that he will utilize.
So Citizen Netanyahu became one of the first to be vaccinated the second time in Israel on, it was Shabbat, was it Motzei Shabbat again? Yes. And coincidentally, he said that by the end of March, all of Israel age 16 and over will be vaccinated. And I know he's talking about Passover, right? It has nothing to do, you know, Passover is March 27th. So obviously he's talking about Passover, nothing at all to do with the elections that happened to be on March 23rd. It's obviously a coincidence, correct?
Yes.
David.
Oh. Boy. He has been extremely focused on getting that done and getting it done by election day because his seat has been wobbly over the coronavirus issue, and not just the coronavirus issue, but how people have seen him handle himself, really think about himself in a very narcissistic way, to the point where I think it was in July, the Knesset Finance Committee took up his tax returns when a state budget still wasn't happening, when 800,000 people were out of work. But his tax returns took up a full day of state of a Knesset Finance Committee debates. That hurt him on the right. We have polls about how much that hurt him on the right. And so the man was deeply, deeply hurt by the virus and by the sense among his own base that he doesn't care about other people suffering, but only about themselves, only about himself and his political position. So he did that, and he made this incredible deal that he offered the drug companies, Pfizer and Moderna. And I happen to, from what we have seen so far and read so far and understood so far from this deal, I am a huge, huge fan of the deal. But it is a deal that is some country had to make it. Some country had to say, I'm going to be first to get vaccinated. And in exchange, you're going to learn from me who's allergic to it and what age groups it works better and what age groups it doesn't. And then you'll be able to produce the strategy for all the rest of the world. One country had to be the guinea pig. Now, I'm glad it's Israel because I think it's already safe. It's already after human trials. It's already, and Israel has this huge advantage of we don't have six more months of an economy that's not functioning. But, and it's a kind of heroic thing Israel's doing for the world in that sense, taking on that data gathering and being first. And it's very good for Israel. So I'm very pleased that he did it, but I think he did it out of a sense that otherwise he loses his seat. And I'm absolutely convinced that there's a very, very personal, element here in terms of his personal political position.
Look, I don't think, I attribute great capabilities to Netanyahu, but I'm not entirely convinced he could have arranged the progress of the vaccine development, testing, arrival in Israel, short delay, renewed arrival in Israel, to work it out to be exactly the end of March. But the coincidence is, you know, undeniable. Israelis over 16. Why didn't he just do Israelis over 18? I mean, he didn't need this. He doesn't need the 16 and 17 year olds being vaccinated. But, you know, we should remark upon it. It is quite the thing, isn't it? That by the end of March, we, according to Netanyahu, would have become the first country in the world to have beaten the pandemic. And by the way, it's election day and you might want to reward your prime minister for having arranged that for you. I just think, you know, people are listening should know that those dates happen to be extremely close. Wow. Go figure.
But David, don't you think that but isn't that how it's supposed to work? I mean, he's supposed to desperately want to stay in power and that's supposed to make him do things that are in Israel's interest. He paid double. He agreed to give the data. And that was enough for Pfizer to say, also, of course, we are small and we have the expertise and we have the infrastructure, so we can collect the data. You can trust it. Rouhani, by the way, the president of Iran, today, this morning, I think it was, or maybe last night, he gave a speech and he explained to Iranians the reason that Khamenei is refusing Western vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer and others and insisting on going with some Iranian vaccine developed together with Cuba. The reason Khamenei made that decision is that they wanted to turn us into guinea pigs. Right. As if, oh, look, but the Israelis are right. That's Rouhani trying to. But there is something to it, which is to say that he pulled out all the stops just to stay in power. It's a wonderful thing. Finally, him scared of power, Joe, something wonderful.
I agree with you on the wonderful thing. I think it is wonderful. I think if we are indeed able, also because of the mix of people who make up this country and the range of genetic backgrounds and so on, you know, if this really helps science, it's a fantastic and wonderful thing. And there's no need to be cynical about that. I think we have to watch what data it is that's being given over. I understand it's being given over also to Pfizer, but as well to the WHO, which is good. We're being assured by people who are credible that it's not private data and so on. You know, there's a lot that's wonderful to be said about this, and it should be said. It's fine. It's great.
In the meantime, I just want to remind our listeners that Israel entered a very serious lockdown basically today, because today is the first day that school children are kept at home. I know my six kids were learning on Zoom, so I fled the house and I went to near Jericho. Chaviv, how is learning from home for your kids today?
Well, nobody invited me to Jericho, so it's been... my wife and I are taking turns. She just got off Zoom, so I just got on. I was on earlier. She was on before that. And I will now spend the rest of the day. I have an interesting piece that I'm working on about the Israeli religious right. Hopefully it'll be interesting. And she will be babysitting. And we're just going to do that roughly 24 hours now until 2 weeks at least officially for the lockdown. But it could last a month. So it's we're just tag teaming. How about you guys?
I'm trying to set up more site visits for the rest of the year. Thank you guys for joining me. See you tomorrow.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. A special thanks to our producer, Raoul Woodliff. I'm Amanda Borshaldan.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And on our mothership, thetimesofisrael.com.